Welcome to the first episode of The Power of Two, a brand new podcast series sponsored by Lenovo and NVIDIA. The Power of Two is all about learning more of the ability to combine and create innovative experiences and solutions through intelligent platforms and infrastructure. At the end of the day, it's all about how the Power of Two drives what I call the three E's: experience, engagement, and expectations for customers and employees to exceed their business goals. I'm your host, Ed Suhu, Innovation and Transformation Executive at Lenovo. And in a moment, I'll explain how my journey led me here. So, what's this podcast all about, and what are we going to cover? We want to share with you the background, perspectives, and thought-provoking tidbits around today's topic, AI, artificial intelligence. We will talk about front ends, back ends, cloud, data science, and data scientists, and more as it applies to AI. We will cover the challenges of AI as it pertains to perceptions, mindsets, privacy, and more. Then, here's the good stuff. We will then talk about some use cases that you will need to consider when you put volumes of data to work for your company. Finally, we will chat about creating the combined value of operating efficiencies and unique experiences to keep your customers coming back for more. Now, a bit on my journey and background. Innovation and Transformation Executive. Boy, that's a long title. In two words, it really comes from being and having a varied and eclectic set of experiences. I was at Oracle twice. HP, Unisys, Novell. I had a data center that I was responsible for that had 100,000 square feet of raised floor. It used to be United Airlines. A BIOS company. A stint with Infor, the ERP solutions software as a service company. Wang Labs. And in between all of those, I had 8 startups, 2 IPOs, 3 buyouts, and 3 absolute disasters. What they all gave me was the experience and insights across multiple verticals, technologies, business models, ISVs, OEMs, and even consulting. In addition to that, I was a blue-collar, card-carrying teamster for about 15 years. I was a brakeman switchman at the Southern Pacific Rail, a machinist at Caterpillar Tractor, forklift driver, truck driver, warehouseman. I had a microbrewery. I had multiple billiard clubs, a graphic design company. Needless to say, quite the journey, with a lot more to go. Today, we are discussing artificial intelligence, what it is and isn't, how it's used today, along with how it's revolutionizing businesses, the workforce, as well as our personal lives in homes, cars, and more, quite possibly in ways you probably never even imagined. My guest today is Jared Carl, Senior Enterprise Partner Solution Lead for NVIDIA. How's it going, Jared?
I am doing great, Ed. Thanks for having me on today.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. And you know, now that you're here, I'd love for you to tell everyone a little bit about you first, and then what you do for NVIDIA.
Absolutely. I would like to think the two kind of overlap one another, what I do and where I've come from. I started my career in tech literally listening to modems connect to the internet. It's an interesting story telling my kids of the noises that computers used to make rather than just picking up their phone and connecting. I moved from there into the Microsoft world, which gave me that interesting perspective on how software drives innovation and how it drives companies to get through there. From there, I worked for Dell for a while, worked at a small supercomputing site here in Austin, small being the Texas Advanced Computing Center, or TAC. Really, really great crew there. That got me my introduction into HPC and really how the hardware is driving these large workflows and how the data is really connecting. I'm sure we'll talk about HPC and the difference of AI coming up there later. From there, I happened to encounter the NVIDIA team. And from the NVIDIA team, I ended up in my position here at NVIDIA, where I moved into a role recently where I work with all of our OEM partners, none more important than Lenovo, of course, really understanding those solutions that customers want to buy. Rather than us telling customers, hey, this is the coolest thing on the planet, NVIDIA is really led by an industry use case, we really get down and understand why these customers are interested in AI, how that AI is made real through their environments, and how we can adopt AI into their business to really make a difference in the world, because that's what all technologists are. You know, you and I and most of our friends in technology, we enjoy the technology. My official background is, you know, I got the generic bachelor's degree in business, but I do have a graduate degree in military history, which is rarely applicable in AI, but it does provide a lot of good, interesting context on the inflection points where AI and history intersect with one another. But it gives me a good ability to synthesize data and really look back on how all of the technology can be applied back into the real world.
Wow, love that background. The military history I find fascinating, especially if we start thinking about how do we cross-innovate and blend ideas and backgrounds to create more value. You know, so now that the audience knows a bit more about you, and I love the beginning where you were listening to modems screeching and squelching and making all those noises when they did a connect. Actually, very few people know that a modem is a modulator demodulator, but that's another story. So let's dive right in. We live in a world that generates incredible amounts of data. There's never a lack of data, as it is more so than ever today. What to make of it, and how, more importantly, create more value. Those in the audience may be familiar with the phrase, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I did a talk once where I said data value is in the eye of the beholder. All that data, in addition to being the volume, the velocity, and the variety, requires and creates infinite amounts of insights to drive faster decisions for it to be useful. I'd like to share a story about Henry Ford and how he approached the problem of building more cars faster, and more importantly, how he used cross-industry innovation to get amazing results. His data was telling him that cars took about 2 to 3 days to be built. He improved that to 12 hours. Not bad, but he felt he could do better. Why? Ford wanted to build more cars to sell at a fair price. To do that, he leveraged the moving assembly line. Now, many people think that Ford invented the moving assembly line. He did not. He improved and innovated it, not only from what he saw at other auto plants, but the real magic was cross-innovating from an entirely different industry, a meatpacking plant in Chicago. He watched in amazement at the speed and the seamless process of the side of beef as it moved down the line in the plant, each team member in their station slicing the cuts of meat with smooth and uninterrupted speed. Ford came to the realization that if he reversed the process of the disassembly cutting up the side of the beef and applied it to building cars on the assembly line, he could be more efficient. As it turned out, he was. What used to take 12 hours, he was able to do in just 93 minutes. Wow. A conversation I had was with a hospital administrator. He was talking all about patient experience. And it was rather fascinating. I said, what if we actually tweaked that a little bit? What if we went from hospital to hospitality? How would you treat your patients as guests? How would you change the experience from healthcare to health aware to wellness? Cross innovation is key to outside the box thinking, and then leveraging that data and new insights driven by AI in a whole new way to deliver value, impact, most importantly, differentiation. AI takes a lot of the disparate data streams and helps companies drive what I call the now, new, and next business and growth initiatives.
You're right, Ed. What I find really interesting about that story around Henry Ford is inspiration and direction can really come from anywhere. You know, in his case, you know, being 100 years ago or so, he was able to go out and view it in person. When we look at it now, intelligence and data analytics are the tools that were able to go out there and get the data. How much data did they have back then? Well, it had to be with your eyes. It had to be what you could get in a library. The amount of data that we have at our fingertips now is absolutely immense. If you have infinite amounts of data, you can make infinite amounts of decisions, right? And that's really how it works. If we break that down, there is data that is feeding the AI revolution that is being created daily, but also the historical context that we have out there, because, you know, I do happen to love history, of how much data they've created. And that's the interesting inflection point now is we look at using the data that you've created before to build those solutions for the future. And if we break AI down into two portions, right, typical computing until literally the last couple of years has been basically a calculator. You give the computer an instruction set of what you want it to follow and tell you the result. Yes, it gets processed. It has been faster and faster and faster. When I was working at TAC, we had just moved to Austin, and we were running flood simulations as Harvey hit Houston. And I was literally watching the data come off the supercomputer as it said, is my neighborhood going to flood or not, right? But we had fed it the data that it wanted, and we said, hey, Stampede, tell us where these floods are going to be based off of this data, right? But that's a computer doing a calculation. AI is now more about the interpretive side of data. It's not asking, what's the weather, Siri? It's asking Siri, what should I wear tomorrow? That requires a neural network, a way of thinking like a human to be able to figure it out of what's going forward. And there's all sorts of AI use cases now that we can build that computing power to be able to process that AI in real time. AI is not a new idea, right? As soon as Alan Turing finished the bomba that helped defeat the Germans during World War II, scientists were immediately thinking about how can we use computers more back in the 50s and 60s. AI models started coming out in the 1980s. They just never had the computing power to be able to handle it. And that's where the crossover with NVIDIA comes in, is we modernize the GPU. Everybody knows this from our pretty graphics, right? That same processing technology is great for building these AI models and deploying these AI models in a way that can actually affect customer decisions. And we call that, you know, inferencing or inferencing out at the edge, where we actually take those AI models and look at it as a car drives down the road and is able to identify it's a human, it's a cat, it's just a normal road, right? And then determine what it needs to do.
Wow, fascinating, Jared. The phrase that caught me was think like a human, right? And I find that fascinating. AI and its application is, you know, we think about movies, for example, Will Smith or Tom Cruise, but oftentimes AI gets kind of a bad rap. They're a really good villain to point to, right? Sticking with movie metaphors, right? It's easy to forget that AI is just simply a supporting cast member and not a supervillain like HAL in Space Odyssey. David, I won't do that, right? Or Skynet in Terminator. And Arnold says, I'll be back. It's some very negative perceptions of AI that I hear are like, AI will actually replace people. AI is expensive. And only big companies or universities can afford it. AI is really complex, and you need a stable of full of expensive data scientists and engineers. Jared, can you scope out some vertical markets that are really benefiting from AI and, you know, maybe touch on some privacy concerns? And is AI really for the few?
You know, it's an interesting comment. The media loves their bad guys, right? You know, entertainment, news media, take your pick. We won't delve into that, but AI in the midterm has been a plausible bad guy, right? It's been science fiction. You know, we're kind of looking in the future. Same thing with zombies, right? Zombies we're not really too afraid of because that's a little too fantastical, but AI is plausible reality now. And people like to think that AI is going to be evil. It's going to take us over. But there's also examples of good AI. You know, there have been, you know, movies out there where there have been good AI robots out there and good AI creatures that actually end up helping the people. But it goes down to the data that you have it and how you train it. We always talk about confirmation bias when training AI. Confirmation bias being, I'm looking for something and that answer is confirmed by the search that I give it. We just recently trained the world's largest natural language processing model with Microsoft, something like 100 trillion parameters or something insane like that. There's still bias in there, right? As we train these models and as we get better at it, we are going to be able to build, again, going back to think like a human neural networks, be able to get those where they can think and make decisions better like humans. Our CEO, Jensen Huang, said, you know, let the AI models speak for themselves, but don't program the AI models to do bad things. There should be rules around it. There should be ways that we govern these AI instruction sets that are out there. That means which industries are going to be able to do it. One of the important ones, and this is the ones that we're seeing really the fastest innovation in, is healthcare. Why, right? Well, there's different healthcare models all around the world, and I hope people all around the world listen to this. People in Europe are absolutely shocked by the cost of healthcare in America, right? People in America are absolutely shocked at how affordable healthcare is in Europe. You know, you should be of the opinion that why am I paying for healthcare? That should be a native human right, right? AI will drive that cost of healthcare down. Why? Because if you can process, for example, radiological images, MRI scans, X-rays, take your pick, you know, 100 times faster and aid the doctor in making that time to decision. So we're accelerating that time to decision, which means we're shortening the time to insight. We're shortening that time to aha, to be able to shorten that time to decision and execution. So the doctor looks at an X-ray, goes, aha, this AI model has identified there's a potential break in the bone here. The doctor then shortened the time to get that person a cast, or there's not a break there, it's just a sprain, you'll be fine, go walk it off. Like the good old high school coach, right? That's making it cheaper. Now, another interesting one on the different end of the market is I was talking to a robotics professor at the University of Texas here in Austin, and he was saying they built AI models for their robots, and they sent these robots out to do hazardous chemical inspection. Now, anybody listening to this, let me know if you want to go off to a warehouse that had a chemical spill and help identify where that mercury is. Yeah, nobody wants to do that, but it's a job. So they built these robots to do it, and they trained the operators to go off and use these robots to help them identify, again, shorten that time to decision by using these robots to identify these hazardous chemical spills. What did that mean? The people were safer, which is fantastic. You trained people to be able to go off and use these robots to be able to do it. And so they made these people, you know, a higher valued employee by doing it. Will AI replace people? You know, they had the same argument, going back to the car analogy, that robots are going to replace people because robots can now do the job that people were able to do in the past before. The question is, and this is of course debatable, is if an AI can do a job as well as a human can, why would a human want to do that job in the first place? Train your people. The people are the absolute key here. Train them to be data scientists. Train them to be able to service the machines. Train them to have a better job than to do the manual labor stuff that they can outsource, because it goes back to you're making a better product, you're making a better decision, you're doing it faster, and your people are absolutely key here that are going to make AI better. Now, is AI complex? If you'd asked me this 10 years ago, I would have said yes. AI is a pipe dream. You know, we'll see it in our lifetime. It's going to be difficult. 5 years ago, it started becoming these neural networks, think like a human, have a computer make a decision rather than just give you the answer. And now I'd say this year, we are already seeing self-driving cars and self-driving trucking, for examples, already. Those are already happening, and we'll probably see full self-driving cars in our lifetime. That is a great example of AI. Siri is a limited AI. You still ask it a question, still gives you an answer. We're going to start seeing more NLP in our lifetime. We're able to talk like a human to a device that's going to be able to interpret it. Getting a computer to interpret sarcasm, that's a different problem. We can approach that one later. But I absolutely see that AI will be in our lifetime and it will provide a positive influence. Is it complex? That is the big question here. Where is your data coming from? How much are you data using? As a consumer of AI, as a business, right? Do you have the data scientists to understand what your data is telling you? Go out to LinkedIn, go look up a company, and go find how many data scientists are out there working for the company. Data scientists make six figures out of college, seven figures if you live in California. They are hiring data scientists at a massive, massive, massive pace. I wish my high school coordinator told me to become a data scientist. It is not as complex as it used to be. NVIDIA works with our own toolkits. We built the platform to be able to do it. We deploy the hardware in Lenovo servers and, you know, other OEM servers, of course, to be able to do it. We are seeing more and more turnkey AI applications. Companies just go off and buy a turnkey IVA, which is intelligent video analytics solution, that interprets the data that they want, and they never have to do the training themselves. You go off and you buy a Tesla. How many people actually programmed their Tesla to do, you know, the self-driving features? Nobody. Does that make AI complex? Tesla took all the cost on that. They passed the cost on to you. You're willing to pay for it. I don't think that's complex. I don't think it's as complex as it used to be. I think it's going to get easier. It was complex. It is relatively complex to build it. But every single month we are seeing the tools out there, the access to the data, faster processing. It's really been a processing bottleneck, as well as ways through using storage to get the storage faster, faster networks, et cetera, et cetera. It all really makes sense. Again, like I said, these models were built back in the 80s, right? The initial ideas of how to do this back in the 80s with deep learning and machine learning. Now it's just implementing it on hardware that's fast enough. And it is getting easier and easier for people to develop it and people and easier to adopt it.
Wow, fascinating. So much to think about. I love your phrase, time to aha. We hear in the business world, you're having a business degree, time to market. But you know what? You can only bring to market what the ahas are. So I find that fascinating. The fact that you talked about a library and a catalog of AI, let's say inferences or models that people can kind of plug and play with, I think that's fascinating. And the challenge of the human aspect of, you know, people being displaced and the like, I love the way you address that as well. I think there's some fascinating things where people can do something. There was an article in Southwest Magazine back in 2017, and the title was Fresh Eyes and Wise Eyes. And it was combining knowledge with the fresh eyes of a newbie, or in this case, maybe AI. What if we took some of the wise eyes experiences and retrained them, reskilled them in with a data scientist perspective, and then to kind of take that knowledge set into new inference engines and AI catalogs? I find it fascinating.
It's an interesting question, right? Is how do people want to use AI, right? People want to talk to their phone, right? But then we go back to one of the other questions, right? Is that privacy, right? You know, 20 years ago when the internet started, we didn't really think about the privacy that's out there. Now, as consumers of the data and consumers of these services, technology and AI in general, we have the ability to control what privacy we want to share. And it's an interesting case when you look at, the millennial generation, right? Some studies have said they don't expect privacy. They are fine trading their data for access to these goods and services for free. And that is a 100% their decision. You know, and I respect that. Personally, I restrict what I see. I was just on vacation. I didn't post any pictures to social media that I was on vacation because I didn't want, you know, the privacy concerns that are out there. So it's interesting. And those models, right? Who's building the models? What are the models showing? People have started copywriting models, which is very interesting, putting patents on these AI models. But NVIDIA, we make a lot of these models for free. We distribute them through our NGC, which is called our NVIDIA GPU Cloud. So that people can go get started and start using these models. You know, for example, in retail, loss prevention, you have cameras. Cameras are a great example of where AI is going to be, because a camera now is just a data stream. You take that data stream and you segment the data. Segment the data means you're identifying what the picture's inside of that data stream. We use it in retail to prevent people literally from walking out of the door with stuff. We saw that item come off the shelf, go into their pocket, and they walk out the door. They didn't pay for it. That's real easy. Casinos, somebody's hand reaches over and steals a chip. That's just a data stream for cameras. Industrial inspection. We can keep going and going and going on these IVA use cases, right? But a lot of those models we have out there that are for free, and there are a ton of partners out there that will go off and do these as well with customers and ready-made solutions.
I love that. You know, some of the solutions I heard recently was a computational CGI, computer graphics, solution, rendering as a service. WPP, one of the largest advertising agencies in the world, who basically builds brand strategies and packaging and communications for brands like Microsoft and even Coca-Cola, they're actually using the power of two, from what I read, where they combined AI and an ISV solution bundle from Epic and their Unreal Engine for gaming, from gaming platforms, and NVIDIA's Omniverse. And they're able now to create ads virtually and globally to reduce travel, to increase speed to production, and addressing at the same time ESG goals, environmental sustainability and governance goals. Less people traveling, less carbon emissions. And I found it fascinating when we broke into it more, they're actually doing it from an end-to-end solution using laptops, high-performance workstations, GPUs, tied to a scalable and secure hybrid data center infrastructure. So another one I saw recently was a voice recognition kiosk in a fast food drive-up to really drive voice recognition to deliver the order faster to the smart kitchen display systems that are using edge servers and GPUs. And one I found really fascinating was quality assurance in a pharmacy production line. They have like 5,000 lines, and at speed, they're putting in all of these pills in blister packs. And they're finding and detecting using computer vision and the GPUs what are the anomalies to basically tie back to error messages, monitoring systems in the manufacturing execution systems of the plant and the ERP platforms from SAP and the like. So there's no shortage of solutions out there with so much data. And you mentioned video data. It's unstructured. So there's a need to process all of that as fast as possible to drive value and what I call power to the edge. This is where the power of two matters to help business address the need for speed and the need for powerful platforms that are already, as you pointed out, Jared, certified and configured to run and operate to deliver better business outcomes. Jared, I outlined some examples for AI. From your point of view, what's behind the curtain of these platforms?
You know, it's always an interesting question, because when we look at it, there's two paths here when we look at this problem. One path is how the IT department really sees. And this is pulling the curtain back, right? When you drive through the drive-thru at your favorite burger place, they went to a voice-activated system. You just speak your voice. They give you the answer. You don't know you talk to a person, right? When was the last time you called your bank or the airline and actually talked to a person the first time? Pretty rarely, right? They're using these to decrease their costs, right? As the consumer, that's what we see. As the IT department sees that, there's a very different way of how they look at that, right? They see that as an edge device, right? An edge device is very important, like you said, Ed. You know, the edge device is going to be your phone. The edge device is going to be the retail store, the quick serve restaurant, whatever it happens to be. Really, when we look at the edge, that is the first point of data ingest into the network or into the infrastructure, right? That's really a great way to look at the edge. Now, there's well-connected edges, like you're on a full fat Ethernet backbone. There's disconnected edges, like a self-driving car in the middle of the desert with no data connection, right? There's all sorts of different kinds of edges, but the edge is the first place where you're going to start applying that AI model, right? And that's where the infrastructure team sees it as. They see that model, then go off and they have to collect that data. That data travels across the wire, typically back to the core data center, which is what everybody thinks of. And that's where the big racks of servers sit. That's where the data is collected. That's where they may do some retraining of the models or whatever, right? IT department sees it from an infrastructure standard, okay? And then we can all agree on that. There's the different side, which is how the data scientist sees that. And that's where we get into MLOps, you know, machine learning operations. They still see the edge, but that's where the data is being generated. They see the data at the edge of, well, what can I do with that data at the edge? How much processing power can I throw at that point of the data at the edge? You know, when you look at your phone and you actually talk to Siri, it's doing really little processing there. It's throwing most of the data out to the cloud, right? But that's because you're in a decently connected place. But when you start adding the latency and when you start adding the network transition in there, data scientists don't like that, right? You know, data scientists are fueled by caffeine, and they don't like to wait for their data results to be there, right? And that's where NVIDIA, Lenovo, and the power of two come together, so you're not making that expensive data science resource wait. So they want to put the compute power as close to the data ingest as possible, but they can't put too much. You've been into a quick serve restaurant, right? You have seen how small those are. You have seen how hot those are. Computing power, I know, runs hot. It needs a lot of juice. It needs a lot of electricity. Putting a lot of computing power right at the edge is typically not realistic. So you have to put something just to inference it. And that's where the data scientists like these small, low-powered devices like the NVIDIA Jetson. Lenovo has a great series of Jetson products that are out there because they can put those neural network models that they built on those and process what that data stream is telling them, right? Telling them the customer asked for this. This is really what they mean. This is what they want, right? And then the data scientist sees that data and they want to collect that data and they want to hold it back. They want to store that data somewhere else so they can go back and retrain their models later. So there's two sides to that conversation, right? Which is the infrastructure side of what is the physical aspect of our network. And then there's the data scientist side of where's that data flowing? What can I do with the data and where can I do it with? And how do I want to manipulate that data along the way? Now, IT departments and data scientists don't always talk to one another. just going to be honest. There's a reason why data scientists, you know, back when they started becoming popular 10 years ago, immediately went off to the cloud. It's been difficult for IT departments to deliver the resources that the data scientist wants because they're speaking the same language, but they're looking at it from two different ways. And this is where we see the infusion of partners from NVIDIA like Domino Data Labs. I work with them regularly. Weights and Biases, another really good MLOps partners. Converge.io is another MLOps partner, right? That merge the operations of data into that physical infrastructure. NVIDIA just launched what we're calling NVIDIA AI Enterprise with VMware. Maybe you've heard of VMware before. They went from a virtualization of using your hardware to maximize its processing power, but now they're really more of a management platform, right? We can make managing this a lot easier. Now, I fully agree, a traditional HPC environment is difficult. You know, when I was working at TAC, they had Slurm, they had Kubernetes, they had PhDs, they had grad students for free labor, right? I mean, HPC natively is complex. When you commercialize it and democratize it into VMware, it makes life easier. It really opens the door to commercial IT to be able to leverage HPC-esque computing inside of their own data center at a lot smaller scale. Are they still doing HPC? Sure. I mean, what is HPC now, right? The lines are getting blurred of big data centers versus doing it inside of a commercial enterprise. So it's very, very important on when you pull those back that the data scientists look at it from the data flow. Where's the data we're ingesting? Where we're going to store it? But the IT departments now are increasingly more being tasked for data security. They're being increasingly tasked for high performance data, being able to meet the needs that these data scientists have and meet the needs of the business. We're starting to see those lines blur, and I think it's a good sign for technology that these teams are really starting to work together, because that's really, like you said, where we're going to see the innovation at. When you can go voice order your favorite hamburger and they get it right, you know, that would be great.
And I love burgers. So and so what's beyond AI and machine learning? You know, you mentioned data scientists, you know, and the need for them. You know, it's actually the fastest growing major and study in colleges today. The future is bright, to say the least, for the data driven. What I find fascinating is that when I chat with folks, they always say, well, I'm going to be cloud first. I said, I'm going to challenge you on that. How about if we think about it a little bit differently? You know, where is it serving the best interest of your constituents the best? We can tie a cloud and connect it. That's easy. The hard part is understanding what's out there, like healthcare, retail, manufacturing, financial services, transportation, and even more. A lot of companies using AI around preventative maintenance. That's one aspect. That's waiting for things to break. What about if we had conditional-based maintenance AI, where we would actually monitor vibrations or heat sensitivities and basically get to that production line before and have something I call the holy grail, planned downtime? You know, with today's supply chain challenges, right? How do we move the mindset of yesterday of just in time and use AI for just in case? So it's some fascinating things. Jared, what are your thoughts around some of these use cases as I kind of described them?
The first one you said is cloud. Cloud is interesting because people say cloud first. What is cloud to them? Is it just somebody else's computer? True, it is. Is it a procurement method? You know, switching from OpEx to CapEx. That's another very important point. Is it functionally infinitely scalable infrastructure? That's another point, right? Now, what I think when people say cloud first is it's really a consumption model of the services that IT can deliver out to their users. Right? They want to be able to self-provision resources, right? That's really what the data scientist wants. They don't want to go off, fill in a help desk ticket, IT department then goes off and then creates the resource. They come back a week later, it's not right, back and forth, right? Like you said, it's just in time, resource provisioning and everything out there, but getting in front of it, right? Very simple AI model was they have a field of windmills where a service tech is going out to service a windmill that broke, right? But they monitor those windmills and they know, hey, these three other windmills in the same patch are going to need maintenance in the next couple of weeks anyway. Let's send the same tech while they're out there to maximize their trip cost. You know, when they do the blade inspection on these systems, they use drones to inspect the blades, right? that's sort of the predictive maintenance, but also the planned downtime. It really hits, you know, when we talk oil and gas, you know, when they have to do these planned downtimes on these refineries. You know, they haven't built a refinery in America since the 70s, right? But oil and gas has been doing HPC work, and really, IoT is the original edge network for SCADA systems because they are little sensors that collect a lot of data and they do a lot of it really fast. Enabling those systems to be able to say, we're starting to see a pressure increase is key, right? Because that's going to prevent accidents. Going back to the environmental sustainability and everything like that, we have to make sure that these systems are able to predict failures, are able to get in front of these failures and make sure nothing breaks, but make sure that the maintenance happens in a way that doesn't impact the users. We look at Texas back in February. We had, well, they called it a once in a century ice storm. It was really about once every 20 years, but well, we can cover that one later. A lot of the Texas power infrastructure was not designed for cold, which makes sense because they say, oh, well, it doesn't get cold here every century. When we looked at the data, it does get cold here about once every 20 years. I remember as a child, not saying how old I am, I remember as a child living in Dallas and it being darn near zero for a couple of days. That's cold no matter where you live, but for Texas, that is really cold. But we've built our infrastructure to sustain the heat, right? And you can't have it both ways in there. But we could have, and this is what we're finding, is done preventive maintenance, planned ahead, based off of multiple data sources. We knew the storm was coming. We knew it was going to be cold. Spin up extra power to be able to do it. And that's one of the other difficult things about power, of course, is we don't have any storage capacity. We have to use what we consume at any given moment, which is, you know, kind of a horrible idea, but there's really no storage capacity once they build the power. So we have to make sure that stays up and running. There's extra gas, you know, the gas lines froze, right? Being able to prevent that or have a plan B in place to be able to take care of it.
I find that fascinating. You know, use or lose, number one, from an energy standpoint, predict in advance, even for the anomalies. And what I find fascinating, looking at your military history background, the Maginot Line only determined that the forces were coming from one direction. You know, history also gives us some great examples of how to build out new predictive models and a new state of business and a new state of geopolitics. So this has been eye-opening, Jared, and thought-provoking and even mind-blowing. AI's many applications offers businesses much more value, differentiation, and promise. When I chat with customers, I said, it's not about being fast and bold. It's about being faster and bolder. And this new world of the three R's of, you know, the 21st century, the recovery, the renaissance, and the roaring 20s. And it'd be interesting how to look at and leverage AI and data to go beyond recovery, to understand the renaissance, the enlightenment of our consumers and workforce, and to deliver the roaring 20s of optimism and best practices. So, Jared, you know, it's easy to get amped up about the performance and what we talked about, the power of two. I loved what you shared today. And as our two companies strive to deliver integrated and certified platforms, catalog inference engines for ISVs and businesses, the future is both bright and filled with great potential. Unfortunately, I hate to close, but we're out of time today. So thanks so much for joining me for the Power of Two podcast. And it's been a real pleasure, Jared.
It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Ed. And you're absolutely right. I agree that we are optimistic, right? As a technologist, we always look forward to the future and what the next great things technology can bring. We don't need to be afraid of failure. I think it was the Mythbusters. They probably took it from somewhere else that said, either we win or we learn, right? There is no failure. Fail fast, fail early, take whichever metaphor you want to use, but just start trying it. And those companies that don't adopt AI, those companies that get stuck in the reorgs of how they're going to adopt it, they will fall behind. The amount of startups, the amount of money that's being poured into this, there is infinite realms of possibility to be able to make a difference in not only in your local business, but also in the world out there as a large. And there are no companies that are better positioned than Lenovo and NVIDIA to be able to take this out to the customers, provide the technology, provide the expertise. And like you said, pull the curtain back. It's not a mystery. We've been doing this for years. It's the opportunity now to be able to go off and improve with the data scientists, with the technology together to make a real difference.
Jared, thanks again. I really appreciate it. And thanks to the audience for sharing your time and attention with us today. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to our show and don't forget to share it with your friends and colleagues. Let them know they can find us wherever they listen to their favorite podcasts. Until next time, I'm Ed Suhu,
host of The Power of Two, an AI podcast brought to you by Lenovo and NVIDIA. Thanks.